Blog Talk Radio.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble's face. You won't see him again. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, American.
Welcome to another exciting show with Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. So turn up the volume and enter our chat room, or grab your phones, call in, and join the conversation. Help us to restore the republic to this country and inspire the majority to be silent no longer.
Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.
All right, welcome to another episode of Southern Sense here on Blog Talk Radio. We are simultaneously broadcasting with Connecticut Hi-Fi, and I want to welcome everyone into the show. Our guest today is going to be Congressman Tom Rice here from the South Carolina District of 7, and we want to welcome him aboard. So, good afternoon, Congressman Rice.
Hello, Ann. How are you?
Oh, I am doing just fine, and may have a little audio problem because we're also broadcasting on Kinetic Hi-Fi out of Charleston, so I hope it's going through to them. If not, I'm sure they'll tell us. Now, you know, you came into the limelight. You've been rather quiet in Congress. No one outside of the state of South Carolina hears very much about you. No one knew who you were until just recently, and you said enough is enough, and you decided to put forward a resolution called STOP Act. Can you tell us about that, sir?
Well, the president has repeatedly taken actions beyond his authority, and I had a lot of people in town halls and every meeting I attended just about saying, why don't y'all do something about it? And when he decided to unilaterally extend the employer mandate under Obamacare by a year this summer, I think the next day, I believe it was Tom Harkin, one of the Democratic senators, said, how does he have the authority to do this? And I agreed with him, and I decided to find out what we could do about it, how we could get him to comply with the law. You know, Article 2, Section 3 of the Constitution requires that the president faithfully execute the laws of the land. And so I got some legal experts at the Congressional Research Service, and I asked them this question. I said, what can we do short of impeachment to have the president comply with the law? And we had a couple of meetings and did a little research, and this is what we came up with.
All right. One of the things you wanted in the act was relief from executive office action. Are you talking about just executive orders, or are you talking about other things?
I'm talking about anything he does outside of the law. And, you know, we name four specific things in the act, but we leave it open to add other things. And the four things we named were the waiver of work requirements under the welfare law, the granting legal work status to illegal aliens, the 1 year extension of the employer mandate, and the 1 year extension of the quote unquote substandard insurance policies, which my definition of that is any insurance policy that people actually want to buy. So those are the four things we specifically mentioned, but we leave it open. And what the resolution does, if adopted by the House, it will require the House of Representatives as an institution to bring a lawsuit against the President to comply with Article 2, Section 3 of the Constitution.
Now, you also have in there failure to faithfully execute the laws of the land. Are you talking about Obamacare, or are there other laws involved?
Well, I just named four of them. Two of them involved Obamacare, one of them involved the welfare law, and one of them involved the one of them was waiver of the work requirement under the welfare law, and one of them was granting legal work status to illegal aliens. It was the President's adoption of the DREAM Act, which was never adopted by Congress.
Now, he also has, what about immigration?
That was one of them. The President's adoption of the DREAM Act grants legal work status to illegal aliens who were brought here as children. He has no authority to do that. That violates our immigration laws.
Well, then why can't we impeach him?
Well, the problem with impeachment is it requires a vote of the Senate. You think Harry Reid's going to take that up anytime soon?
That's a little wishful thinking, isn't it?
Yeah, I think Harry Reid wants to carry Obama's water for him, and I don't think that they much mind if he complies with the law or not.
Now, can't we? Why are we turning only to courts for redress? Why can't we have everything just null and void because of it?
Why can't we have it null and void? Well, you know, the President is charged with carrying out the laws of the land. He certainly has some discretion in doing that, but in my opinion, he's gone well beyond his discretion. The executive branch would argue that they're within their discretion, so one side or the other claiming one is null or void, I think that would require action by the judiciary, which is why we brought the lawsuit, brought the resolution to bring a lawsuit. We'll let the courts decide whether or not his actions are null or void.
All right, I've got my co-host with me. Mike, I know you want to ask this gentleman a lot of questions.
Well, I don't think he has 3 days to answer questions, but my overall...
3 days might be a little much, my friend. Who is this?
My name is Mike. I am a co-host with Annie. I've been now for 2 years. My congressman
hey Mike,
is Dustin. Great, and thank you for joining us very much on this Christmas Eve. I'm sure your schedule is busy. My congressman is Justin Amash. How do the other Republicans, I'm more than sure Amash would be with you, how do the other Republicans feel like this, congressman? Because one of the things, since Annie and I have done this show, we've just noticed this group of Republicans that we're not sure what party they belong to. We gotta look to see if the R's there because they just seem so out to lunch.
Well, I don't think you have to worry about Amash. He's as conservative as they come, and I think that we're not going to have a whole lot of problem gathering up co-sponsors. I didn't release this until I started working on it last July, but I didn't release it until the Thursday before we got out, left for the Christmas break. So, and I gathered up 34 in about a week. I feel like we'll get a lot of Republican support on this.
Do you, with the recent wins in courts, number one with the NSA, and I believe the other one, was with the actual, Affordable Health Care Act standing up for the religious groups. Does that give you any hope as Congress that maybe the laws of the land will supersede the political law of the land?
I certainly hope so. I think this, even more than the ones you're discussing, are a real threat to the foundations of our democracy. I mean, if the president can pick and choose which laws he wants to enforce, then Congress might as well go home. I mean, what would we say if, when the next president came along, he decided he just didn't like any part of the Affordable Care Act, and so he wasn't going to enforce any part of it? Or what would we say if the next president was a Republican and he said, you know, I'm just not going to enforce the income tax, or maybe I'm not going to enforce it against Republicans? How would we react then? You know,
my final question. Well, go ahead. I was going to say my final question before I throw it back to Annie. From a layperson standpoint, let's say I'm just a person who tuned in to listen to the show today. From a layperson standpoint, why would anyone vote for a Republican? I mean, it's like, okay, look at all this free health care, free telephone, everything is free. Why vote? Why should they vote the way I vote and Annie and yourself and conservative when everything on their side is free?
I think most people realize that everything is not free. I think most people recognize that this country was built on people who are self-sustaining, who are on hard work, on our constitutional principles, and I think that it certainly is interesting to me that President Obama was reelected given the economy that we're in. But I think people have come to realize now that maybe we need to be heading in a different direction. If you look at his approval numbers, if you look at his trustworthiness, I think people are realizing where we are. And I'm very hopeful about the future of the Republican Party and very hopeful about the future of our country.
Well, thank you. So am I.
All right. Well, recently we had several members of the House leadership, including Boehner, going after the Tea Party. When if they had gotten the support of the Tea Party, they would get a lot more done in Congress. Isn't that true?
If they got the support of the Tea Party, they would get a lot. I'm not sure about that. Here's where I think Mr. Boehner's frustration was, and I don't think it was with the Tea Party necessarily. I think it was with some of these outside groups pressing congressmen. And one thing I think we have to do better is we have to use a little bit better strategy. In other words, everybody wants to fight on every single issue. And sometimes that's not the most productive way to get things done. What you have to do is figure out how you can win, and then you pick your battles. Particularly when you're the majority of one-third of the federal government. You know, you got the House, the Senate, and the President. We hold a majority in the House only. That doesn't afford us the opportunity to play a whole lot of offense. A lot of times we're playing defense. You know, people fuss about this Congress being non-productive. But the truth is, the way our constitutional framework was established with those three branches up there, they made it intentionally hard to pass a law. They wanted it to be difficult to pass a law. And now when you've got a divided government, when you've got Republicans in charge of one part and the Democrats in charge of the other two parts, it's especially hard to pass a law. But I'll also say that gridlock is not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, if you think about the last time one party had control of all three, the House, the Senate, and the presidency, out of that came Obamacare and Dodd-Frank. Two of the biggest expansions of the bureaucracy and job killers that have happened in 50 years. And so I will say that gridlock sometimes is a good thing. But now going back to your question about Mr. Boehner, I think his frustration was that that sometimes we get into a period where everybody wants to fight over every single issue, and that's not the way to win. What we have to do is figure out how to win. We have to have a strategy, and we have to pursue that strategy. Now, in the short run, fighting over every single issue may feel good, but in the long run, that may cause more Democrats or more Republicans to get elected, depending on which side you're on. And elections matter. And in my opinion, here's somewhere I agree with Mr. Boehner. Elections matter, and that if we want to if we want to win in the long run, we need to take the Senate, and we need to certainly hold true to our conservative values, but we also need to act in a fashion that allows us to take the Senate come November.
All right, we got a caller coming in on Skype. Let me bring this individual on. Skype caller, you're on the air with Representative Tom Rice. Who am I speaking to?
This is Joe. How are you guys doing?
Hi, Joe.
Joe, hey. Good to finally have you call in.
Yeah, I was just...
Hey, Joe, how are you?
I think we just lost Joe. Yeah, his call just dropped. Oh, well, if Joe's still listening in, call back, Joe. We also have another...
Oh, go ahead, Annie.
We got another caller, and I believe this is Thomas. Thomas, you're on the air live with Representative Tom Rice. You have a question for him.
Well, actually, I have a question and a comment. Just it'll be quickly. My comment.
Okay, we're having a lot of luck with our callers today. Thomas just dropped too. Right, Mike, you were going to ask another question.
Well, we're glad of that, Congressman. I wish we can get Joe back too. Joe always has interesting questions. What is the mood as a conservative, as a real conservative, and I'm a big Justin Amash fan, what is the mood among Republicans to be able to basically take the Senate? It seems to me, at least in Michigan alone, that the Republican Party itself has just abandoned all of us loyal Republicans, almost in a sense that we're treated as peasants. And I feel in Michigan, and I fear in Michigan, that the Republican Party will simply implode based on the fact that, I mean, they're not even treating their own very well. It almost is really becoming an elitist party. For years we had heard about that, and of course we knew that wasn't true. But it almost seems, as a Republican, that this has actually been taking place.
Well, I don't know what you mean, not treating them well. Explain that to me.
Well, meaning I'll give you an example. Is that your standard Republicans have always has fairly been conservative, balanced budget type, right? People believing in people's rights. If you really, I mean, a lot of the things that we've don't like Barack Obama, it's more of part two from George W. Bush, where we had the Patriot Act and the NSA, and most of this spying and all this basically started under Republicans. And it seemed like it the Republicans have not stopped, and it's basically the last bill that Mr. Amash tried to get through about defunding the NSA, it was preserved by who? Republicans. I mean, it just seems like they have lost the touch with the base that has supported them for so many years.
I'm not familiar with any bill about defunding the NSA. I know I know he put up his bill to require a judicial review before reviewing an American citizen's phone records, which I voted for. And it came very, very close to passing. But, you know, you've got the NSA up there arguing on the other side of that through gathering this information that they've prevented, I can't remember the exact number, but I'll say it's 54 terrorist attacks. And there's certainly a divided opinion up there. I believe on Mr. Amash's amendment, it was incredibly bipartisan. I believe that it very narrowly failed, and I didn't sit down and calculate the percentages, but probably close to half the people that voted for his amendment were Republicans and half were Democrats. I don't know that this is necessarily a party issue. I think the privacy issue cuts both ways. In fact, the Democrats have certainly been more expansion of the NSA probably than the Republicans have.
All right, I do believe we have Joe coming back in on that. Is this you, Joe?
Yeah.
Thank God. Hey, Joe.
Hey, Mike.
All right, you have the question.
Now I do, yeah. When I got cut off, I think I missed probably what you were saying about the NSA, Congressman. What is your opinion about the NSA, and in particular Snowden?
Well, I think that I voted for Mr. Amash's amendment that would have required the NSA to get a search warrant, you know, just like any other search to review individual phone records. I think what they're doing now is just a little too far over the line.
So what are you doing to stop it outside of this particular amendment? You guys are in charge. So by doing this, let's have a committee to have a review. It's going to take probably years. But in the meantime, the NSA is investigating people that they shouldn't investigate beyond metadata. They're listening to my phone calls. They're reading my emails now. I want something done now to stop it.
Well, the society we live in is based on majority rule, and we just had a vote to try to overturn the collection of the metadata, and it failed. Narrowly failed, but it failed. And what we were just saying before you got back on the line, it failed across the people that voted for it. I think it was, I want to say, probably close to half the people that voted for the amendment were Amash's amendment were Democrats. I mean, this is a bipartisan issue, a privacy issue, a bipartisan issue. You've got on the one hand the national security people saying that, look, this is absolutely necessary to avoid the next 9/11, and that we've used this information to quell 54 terrorist attacks. And then on the other hand, you've got people who are very concerned about individual privacy. And
you've also got a report that says that No attacks were prevented by NSA. None. Zilch. Nada.
Well, you know, I guess you can find a report that says anything, but the NSA...
Yeah, I also find the Second Amendment. I think it's the Second Amendment. That's the one that bears arms. I think it's the Fourth Amendment, then. It says no unreasonable search of my person, papers, etc. Now, by going through this bipartisan stuff, the Democrats will blame the Republicans. Republicans will blame the Democrats. And in the meantime, the American people suffer. We have an amendment in the Constitution that says no unreasonable search. That means never, ever. And right
I
now,
agree with you.
The NSA...
I agree with you, which is why I voted for Mr. Amash's amendment. Unfortunately, more than half the people don't agree.
I don't care about the other half. We have an amendment. We have a constitutional amendment in place, and you're talking about majority rule. That still doesn't hold water because we have a democratic republic, a republic which is based upon supposedly the rule of law. This thing about the Democrats and Republicans taking turns, going back and forth, trying to vote for amendments in and out, doesn't hold water with me. At the same time, the NSA is investigating everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Should never have started. It shouldn't be stopped. Now,
then the question becomes, what is an unreasonable search and seizure, and the NSA's position on that, and the position of a majority of Congress is
fine,
that metadata is not an unreasonable search.
That's fine. Congressman, what you're saying is since the NSA has this in place, then you guys have got to take your time doing this bipartisan stuff to try to replace it, if it's going to be replaced, which also means that other branches of government, or rather divisions of other the branches of the government, can implement their particular agenda, and then Congress is going to say, well, let's have a committee to investigate and then see what we're going to do now. We have, for years, Echelon, we've got other types of mechanisms, notably now the NSA, investigating everybody. Do you not think there's a danger with them collecting information about everybody in the United States under the guise of terrorism so that later on they can take all this information and use it against everybody?
Well, that may be why I voted against it. I voted for Amash's amendment to ban that practice. Remember, I said I did that three times.
Okay, I have a question, too, that kind of in relation to Joe's. you're suing the president. You want to sue the president regarding these issues. So they say you can go ahead with your lawsuit, Congressman, and sue the president. Now, do you get an attorney? Or, I mean, who stands for the side of suing Obama for all this, just everything? I mean, for whether it's affordable health care or Joe's talking in the NSA, or whether or not these idiots are looking in my window, knowing my personal business. I mean, who?
Yeah.
Do you guys hire a lawyer? How does that work?
Yeah, assuming this resolution passes the House, the House will have attorneys to bring the lawsuit, whether it be attorneys that are employed directly by the House or it be outside counsel, I'm not sure, but I would they will have attorneys to bring the lawsuit. See, the Justice Department is an arm of the executive branch, not the House.
All right, we got another caller coming in. Wayne Dupree, who's also a BTR host as well as a contributor on Fox, Hannity, and so forth. Good afternoon, Wayne. Wayne, you out there?
Yes, I am. Hi.
Hi.
Hey, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you doing?
We've got Congressman Tom Rice with us. He has the resolution out there to sue Obama. Wayne?
Yeah. Sue for... I'm not up on that.
All right.
Sorry.
That's okay.
All right.
You have a question you want to ask Wayne?
I think Wayne just dropped also. BTR is having
a
problem with this.
Look, it's been fun. I got to go. I appreciate it. I hope y'all have a good
day. Thank you, Congressman. Thank you very much, Congressman.
Yeah. Thank y'all, too. Y'all take
Congressman,
care.
Congressman, I'd like to see the president in handcuffs if you ever think about that. Thank you very much, my friend.
Y'all take care.
You too. Just in general, and I appreciate the congressman joining us, in general, okay, now we're suing the president. This is such bullshit. We as citizens need to just, the hell with all of this.
We need to reelect
stuff.
The whole fucking Congress is what we
no,
have to
Joe, do. We need to do it. Joe, that still doesn't answer. It still puts politicians in those seats. We as people, we the taxpayers, the punks, the peasants, these people are all pimps. I like this congressman and I like my congressman, but they're just way outnumbered by the filth. We need to do it. And somebody made a quote, and it was Thomas Jefferson or someone said, never trust a politician to do anything because they don't pay the price for being wrong. Something like that. You know, why do we need to sue? We need to get the president, put him before 10 good people, and have the trial, not, you know, people who own hardware stores or, work manual labor, those type of people.
Well, that's what happened
back
in the 1700s, when there was frontier justice.
I like this congressman. I think he's he obviously is taking action against Obama. But they have all this time to prepare. Let's play pretend here. Let's say the trial's tomorrow. Everybody involved is going to be politically selected. So even if it goes to the jury, that jury's played with. I mean, it's just...
That's the danger of the NSA. Because if you're going to pick a jury, and if every member of the jury has had their privacy violated by the NSA, and the NSA says, okay, this guy's picked for this jury, this guy's picked for that jury. But, Mr. Jones, do you not realize that when we took a look at your credit card transactions and we found out about the whore you're sleeping with, how would you like us to tell your wife? You're going to vote this particular way on this particular trial. That's one of the dangers of the NSA.
That's
Mike, what you're talking about, we have to take action. The only way we as the people are going to take action, if we're not going to elect the people, I mean the congressmen, right, and the senators, and they're the ones that are the cause of this virus called politics, then we have to do it ourselves, which means a violent revolution. Because otherwise we don't have the power to do it.
No, Joe, we do have the power to do it. Because let me give you an example. And
mm-hmm.
Annie probably can answer this. Who's the most powerful elected official basically in our neighborhood? And in Joe's neighborhood and Annie's neighborhood and my neighborhood, who would be the most powerful law enforcement person?
Law enforcement would be the attorney.
Would be the sheriff.
The sheriff. Yes, when they come to town, the sheriff plays them under arrest. It's kind of like you're never going to see Eric Holder do anything. And more than likely, Republican or Democrat, a state attorney isn't going to do anything either. The state attorney could be the worst enemy of Barack Obama, but they're the same type. The sheriff, your local sheriff, can place these people under arrest. And
that
takes care of everything right there.
The local sheriff
you have
tried
to put
to do
pressure
that.
On that person. Well, they're elected, though, Joe. We have to put pressure on these people. And
yeah,
when we do,
mm-hmm.
go ahead.
The local sheriff, they tried, some local sheriffs have tried to put pressure on the TSA. Didn't go anywhere. You may be right, maybe not only in theory, but perhaps in, what the fuck?
It's Annie.
Oh. I thought I was going to get cut off again.
No, that's Annie's doing.
Oh, all right. But the thing is that the sheriff, they get their paychecks from, and it's not from us, okay? They get it from, I don't know, maybe the state. And now the state, all states are now beholden to the federal government because of loans which the federal government gave the states. Which means if they don't do what Washington says, they can get fired or they get the loans automatically recalled, which means that the sheriffs are in trouble, all right? So
yep.
I don't even know if the sheriffs have this kind of power to arrest the President of the United States. I don't know. Maybe they do. But other than that, I'm telling you right now, you may like your particular congressman, and that's the problem with a lot of people, okay, is that they like their particular congressman, even though they hate Congress. Congress right now is a 6% fucking disapproval rating. They are lower than pig vomit. But you know what we do? We keep reelecting our congressmen, thinking that the other 434 bastards, they're the bastards, but our congressman, he's a great guy. No, all of our congressmen, our local politicians, our state politicians, our federal politicians, they all suck. They all got to go.
After I get finished.
You know?
Well, my congressman says he's only a second term. He's actually he's a strong constitutionalist. So, he's exactly, you would like him too. He's exactly what,
I would question him, and I would want to find out what is, if he's voted for anything.
Look him up, Joe.
Okay.
All his votes are posted. Look him up. His name is Justin Amash. He just voted to defund the NFA. And it lost by 6 votes. To defund it. Yeah,
okay.
Basically, he couldn't get rid of it, so he wanted to fully defund it. He was also removed after his first term from several committees because
he
didn't control the party line.
If you get
all right,
John Boehner. Go ahead, Annie.
We've got our other guest right in on the line. Unfortunately, his call dropped just as he was starting to introduce himself. So we welcome Wayne Dupree, a fellow BTR host, as well as a political commentator. He's been on Fox News, Hannity, and so forth. Good afternoon, Wayne, once again.
Hi, how are you doing again? Sorry about that.
Good to have you, Wayne.
What happened?
Well, Joe and I thought maybe you didn't like us. So.
No, you know what? I looked at my phone. I was like, okay.
Hey, don't worry. That happened to me. I thought Annie cut me off, but it's BTR.
But I think they've already dropped 4 calls into the show so far.
Yeah.
So you're not the only one. You should feel privileged. It's the NSA.
You're damn right it is.
Those sons of guns.
Now, Wayne, you've got an interesting history. When I was reading about you on your website, I was surprised to feel that you were originally a staunch Democrat who would get up in Republicans and conservatives' face and actually curse them out.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I did. I would tell them, just the same old stuff. They were wrong. They didn't know what they were talking about. That they were a part of the KKK. That they were keeping the black man down. That they didn't want blacks to get ahead. That they didn't come to the community because they were rich everything that you hear today is just retread for the last 50 years, and that's what I used to do. And the person, a couple people that I used to say that to, they never raised their voice. They just talked cool, calm, and collected, which made me more angry because they wouldn't return my fire, with the way that I was coming at them. But It was weird. It was weird. But in 2008, during the election, you know, I saw the racial component being thrown against. First was being thrown against Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton, and the media took a hold of that. I mean, you're listening to a Democrat who you couldn't tell anything differently, and I'm sitting here watching it with my open eyes. I'm watching the media, you know, almost every time Bill Clinton said something, there was racist. So I was like, you know, I sat back and I started listening to the other side for a change. Actually listening to the other side for a change. And I started watching how things were going the way that they were talking about it. Things start going exactly like they were saying. I was like, wow. And, you know, I made the concerted effort and the strong will. I had the strong drive to change, being in the military, and I changed.
Well, we want to thank you for your military service, but now you're a staunch conservative, aren't you?
Oh, yeah, straight up. Straight up. And whenever I can go and tell the story and tell the facts, and that's what I'm going to do. You know, I'm going to tell the proud history of the Republican Party, even if the Republican Party doesn't want to tell it. I'm going to tell it. You know, how they passed legislation to end slavery and racism. I'm going to tell it how they passed legislation for women's rights. You know, even if the Republican Party doesn't think it's important to me. Because being lied to for over 40 years, I just turned 40. I think my mom told me I'm 45, so I just turned 45. You know, I'm going to tell it. I have to tell it. I mean, because, you know, I'm pissed off that I was lied to for so many years. I have to go and tell people the truth.
Well, there's a gentleman named Joseph Kirk who has his own radio show on 94.3 WSC-FM, and he wrote down something called the 6 Cardinal Rules of Liberalism, and I was reading it, and it's most amusing. Number one, it's always blame a Republican or conservative. If you don't have one, make one up and blame that one.
Yep. That's about right. That's about right. I was always blaming the first George Bush, Ronald Reagan, you know, and I really didn't know about Eisenhower before that. Nixon, you know, I was blaming Nixon. So, I mean, any Republican that was out there, I was blaming them for trying to hurt the black community.
Yeah. Now, number two was black, gay, female, nor any other protected minority status means a damn thing unless the victim is a liberal.
That's right.
That is right. A lot of truth in that one.
It is. It is. I mean, it's a shame, though, but yeah, you're right.
Yeah, because a lot of people aren't talking about the black-on-black crime because it's not a white person on black, and that really gets me because a lot of kids are out there getting hurt and murdered. And no one's doing anything about it. And we're screaming about it, but they're saying, oh, that's racist. But it's not.
Well,
it's human.
Alice Sharpton just found out in Chicago with that group that he thought he was going in there as Caesar. And he ended up as Judas from the way that they went after him on the black community not getting what they or not feeling like they were their needs were being attended to. So, you know, I thought it was great.
All right, Joe, did you see that video up on YouTube? It's out recently. It was this past week. He goes into a Chicago meeting, and I would say it was 95% black inside the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And here he's
mm-hmm.
thinking he's walking into his own church, and he's going to
mm-hmm.
preach, and he's expecting everyone to say yes and amen and yes, sir. But Joe, have you seen that?
Me?
Yeah. Have you seen
no.
that video?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you've got to look it up on YouTube. Maybe Mike can find it and post it up there.
Yeah.
But it is an absolute excellent video. And I just sat back laughing, and I said, they're starting to get it. Amen. Thank you. They're starting to get it. Mike, have you seen that video yet?
No, I haven't. I'm actually looking it up as we speak.
Oh, yeah. It's out there. It's big.
What's the video about? Sharpton walking into a town meeting?
Well, yeah, it was a town hall that Sharpton wanted to talk about guns.
Yeah, okay, I did see it, actually. I did see this. I posted it on my Facebook, but yeah.
Gun control. He wanted to talk about gun control, and it turned into a what has the Democrat done for the black community lately. And it got to the point that after each speak, I mean, each person they had a question was, instead of asking a question, they were turning it into a monologue about how the black leaders and the Democrats in Chicago and over the nation, the Democrat Party, even that they haven't tried to help the black community. And there was an old 86-year-old pastor who was like, we need to develop something like the Tea Party within the Democrat Party to wake up some change, because the people on top ain't listening.
Now, I thought the most powerful part was, he goes, we have to have town hall meetings like the Republicans do, not like you do. And I said, bless them. And you had a lot of people, the second he said Tea Party and Republican, you heard no boos. You heard a lot of cheers.
No, you didn't. You did not. You, exactly.
Not a single boo.
You're right. You're right.
And,
yep.
Mike, have you found it yet?
Yeah, I actually, now that I've seen it, I saw it several days ago and I posted it on my Facebook.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, if you can put the link up in the chat room so people listening in and watching, can put that link up in there also. I want to remind everyone, we're also broadcasting not just on BTR, but we're on Kinetic Hi-Fi, a station that just picked me up, signed the contract last week, and we're now broadcasting through here, mostly in South Carolina, aiming for a lot of more South Carolinians listening in. Listen, the third one, and you're going to love this one, Wayne, the third one is, if government doesn't do it, it doesn't happen. If government doesn't do it legally, we need to give them the power to do it. If government has done it and it isn't working, it's because it's not enough government was applied. Now, we were just talking about that with the Representative Rice, weren't we, Joe?
I'm glad you mentioned that particular precept, because that is liberalism, practically to its hilt. The thing is, now that you just mentioned this guy's name, Rice, remember when he said in answering Mike's question, he said that he thinks that most people are aware of what's going on today and don't want things for free. I'm afraid, Congressman, you're pretty much wrong.
Yeah.
40 million people on food stamps, 100 million people are getting checks from the government. Either they're on the dole or they're getting it through contracts or some other means. They want things for free.
Believe me, if they didn't want it for free, then they would tell them to stop.
Right. They would not be voting in the Democrats. All right.
Well, maybe he should have amended that. Should have been 95% or the majority of taxpaying voters don't want it. Because those of us that are paying the taxes to support these programs don't want it. The ones that are not paying taxes and getting the programs, they do want it. So maybe he should have clarified that.
Well, even if he said voters, because remember, the illegals, they're being considered citizens now. Pretty soon they will be able to vote. And
That's why I said taxpaying voters, not just taxpayers.
Oh, taxpaying voters. Oh, yeah, well then... Yeah. Well, I mean, if he amended that, then you'd have to think, oh, let me see, out of how many millions voted, how many of them actually pay taxes? Maybe 10%. Okay, because the majority of people in America now they're getting something from the government. So they're beholden to the government in some way, either through a job or for getting something for free. So they want the Democrats in there. I'm of the opinion that Republicans, outside of what happened to the three scandals this year with the IRS, the NSA, and I think it was with Benghazi, outside of those scandals, the Republicans don't have a shot about winning any major elections, because the country right now is full of freeloaders.
Well, I don't know, because, I mean, that Obamacare is a big gigantic cut right now, and it's, when January 1st hits and that $100 credit comes out, tax credit comes out, and January 4th when they go to their doctors finding that they aren't enrolled, they might have signed up, but they're not enrolled because they haven't paid any money, they're going to be pissed.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to be
Did you read the tweet that was on the internet when it was representative of most of the liberals, when it said, "I didn't know that I'd have to pay for this myself."
Right, right, right.
Are you kidding me?
That's what I'm talking about. And you know what really got me? A couple of weeks ago when Sebelius was answering questions, she said that 365,000 people had enrolled already, had enrolled. And the congressman was like, okay, so if 365,000 have enrolled, how many are covered? And she said, actually, I don't know. We don't have those numbers. I was like, you know what? She just said 365,000 were enrolled. The answer should have been 365,000 are covered, because to be covered, you have to enroll, which means you have to pay. And she's like, "Well, I don't know."
Yeah, she's parsing words. She's doing the congressional lawyer's dance. You know what is.
Exactly.
What is?
And sign up. Replace is with sign up now, because this administration has mixed sign up with enrolled, enroll with sign up, and it all sounds like the same thing, but it's not. I mean, basically what that healthcare.gov website is a big, gigantic database for registration for vote or a mailing list. That's all it is. And it really doesn't have to be there, because when you sign up, they just – actually, it's almost like Planned Parenthood in a way, because you sign up and then they refer you to the insurance company. You know what I'm saying? I mean, that's what Planned Parenthood does with mammograms. You sign up, but they refer you to where you can go get a mammogram, because they don't provide a mammogram.
But they do provide abortions.
Now, that's something that they do, and that's what needs to be done to that website.
Yep, they won't save a life, but they'll take one, which is amazing. I want to remind people, our call-in lines are open. It's 917-889-3675. Now, Wayne, you liked that last line, didn't you?
I like that last line. I'm going to use it, too.
Hey,
I have to copyright it.
Mike, was I rough enough on the congressman, or should I have been any rougher?
Oh, I actually thought, other than you were interrupting him, not letting him finish, Joe, I thought you went easy on him. You keep like telling Annie and I, well, is it okay if I remember, you know, he is a great guest, and I liked him. I mean, I appreciate him calling in and whatever. But they work for us. They're all, and I don't care who the person is. I don't care if we have President Obama. Our governor, he's such an idiot. We you do got to watch your language a little, Joe, because now that we're picked up on the
I didn't know that though. Yeah, you're right.
But anyway,
either way, but these people work for us. Our governor goes around saying the people are our customers. We're the business owners. They're our customers. Thinking, where the hell did you get that idea, you dummy? I mean, they are the servants of the people.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't – I don't agree in being rude or, you know, getting into their personal business, but these people need to be grilled. They need to be put on the hot seat. One of the reasons so many of these people love being on television – it's so much fun, and they love exposure, and, of course, then they get to watch themselves on TV and think, maybe I need a haircut or whatever. They need to be sweating balls on here, thinking, well, like Michelle Bachmann hung up on Annie. She couldn't take the heat.
Oh, she did? Oh, and I missed that. Oh,
yeah, that was 2 years ago, yeah. Yeah, that was funny. Yeah, her husband was shuffling her out the room. Yeah.
Oh, damn.
Well, and my whole point is that
what you're saying is that they really do have to be grilled. That's why I was interrupting them, because these guys are slick. They actually take classes on how to present themselves in front of the public,
mm-hmm.
and telegenetic classes as well. Okay,
mm-hmm.
If you give them any amount of time to finish their answer, they will take it. They want to play beat the clock. I don't want them to beat the clock. I want them to answer my question right then, right there, and then we can move on. So, yeah, I did that the other day on another show, too. This poor guy, I didn't come here for... I said, yes, you did. You're running for office. Yes, you did.
Oh, yeah.
Well, here's a thought. Why don't we mandate then, before any law or resolution goes into effect, the public has 2 weeks of input. So that way we know what's going to be in that bill so that when they vote on it, we can hold them accountable, and we can also give them complete feedback. You know, Obamacare would never have passed had that happened.
You know what about it? The thing was, is with Obama, he lied a minimum 29 times regarding Obamacare.
Yeah, he did.
Okay.
Yes, he did.
And if we had given him a fee, or let's say he was going to give us the opportunity to get our input, and we said, well, okay, we would like to have this and this and this, he would have lied. Then he would have put forth what he wanted to put forth anyway, and then look at what happened. There's a theory going around that Obamacare is set up the way that it is to deliberately fail. Have you guys heard that, and what do you guys feel about that?
I've heard that many times.
Yeah?
All right, let's have Wayne respond to that, because he is officially our guest. Wayne?
Mm-hmm. No, I've heard that. I've heard that many times. I've heard that on my own radio show. I've heard that on social media. And I would not put it past him to create something to make it fail, to bring in single payer. That's why the website's not fixed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the back end. The back end is not fixed. And they aren't even talking about fixing it. You know, they are talking about finishing the paying aspect of it. And the insurance companies, without that being fixed, without the back end being fixed, the insurance companies can't get the information or get paid. Someone on my show came up with a story the insurance companies are being told by the administration, well, let us know and estimate how much it's going to cost, and we'll pay it.
So is the theory that they want it to fail so that they can blame the insurance companies, so that then the government can nationalize the insurance industry and take over?
There you go.
Is that it? Okay.
Yep, that's right. They can swoop in and say, well, look, we told you that the insurance companies were bad. We tried to work with them. They are terrible. We can do it for you, just like they did for college loans.
Yeah, now the person that's supposed to be fixing this, or the company, I should say, that's supposed to be fixing this, is one of Obama's donors. So, duh, and it's the same company that set up the Canadian healthcare system that they failed miserably at. Meanwhile, you've got the Obama administration knew of the risks before the launch. This is an article by Elizabeth Harrington Fellow in the Washington Free Beacon. And then you also had Kristen Gillibrand out of New York, who admitted the Democrats knew full well that people would be booted from the health plans. Yeah.
Supposedly, they knew 3 years in advance. Now, the reason why I asked the question was because if that's the case, that means if they're going to do that, if they're going to nationalize the insurance industry, that means they're going against their donors, because the donors, the ones from the insurance industry who gave them the money in order to have them participate in this fiasco, they're not going to like it. So I'm wondering, if they're not going to like it, and they're going to do it against their donors anyway, what is their major plan?
Well, if it is to nationalize the insurance industry, think about the effect. You know, car insurance, homeowners insurance, life insurance, property insurance.
No, I understand that, Andy. I mean, if they're going to nationalize the industry, they just did that to take over and control it. But if they're going to do it at the risk of losing their donors, that's kind of like, you know, cutting off your nose to spite your face.
Well, I believe all of the donors are going to get sweetheart deals anyway. All of the donors, all of the people that have helped. I mean, if that's the donors that you're talking about. You know, the people that support the administration, is that what you're talking about?
I'm talking about, in particular, the insurance industry donors who are saying, okay, now we're getting the waivers, we're getting the exemptions, we're giving you money, and we're going to participate in this exchange, but now the exchange doesn't exist anymore because now you're kicking us to the curb, and now you're putting in your single payer. Where does that leave us? And we gave you this money? That's got to piss them off.
Probably will.
So if they're going to piss them off and they don't care about pissing them off, that's a really big step. That's really dictatorship. I mean, that, you know, to its fullest. If you're going to take the money that was given to you and say F you to the people who gave you the money, then your end game is we don't care about not only the little people, but we don't care about you anymore either. And hello, Hitler.
Well, you know what? Actually, I don't even think all that's going to happen until after he's out. And then that's and then Hillary's going to come with a plan for the national payer system.
Mm-hmm.
Well, also, the point is that several states are not participating, so it won't apply to them. You know, that's this has just screwed up everything. I mean, and I don't blame President Obama. I don't even blame the Congress or the Senate. The way to stop the NSA from spying never should have let it started in the first place. When President Bush introduced Tom Ridge from Homeland Security, we should have booed him and threw stuff and said, no way. The way to avoid this is stopping it right off the bat. Don't even let it get in place. But we as people are complacent, we're lazy, and we keep using excuses for ourselves. And that's the worst kind of country you could possibly have.
Well, you're right. I mean, Americans, millions of us are apathetic. But then in order for us not to become apathetic, to overcome that, we have to become enlightened. And I remember before I became enlightened, and I had, I pretty much had a predilection towards blaming the government anyway because they're a big institution, you know, and I always knew that, you know, power corrupts and power corrupts absolutely. But people are very, very reluctant to blame the American government to the extent that we know they should be blamed. I think of everybody in Congress and the president as being absolute, dictionary-defined traitors. Okay? I think every one of them should be investigated and tried for treason because the amount of damage which they have done over the course of 40 or 50 years, it's not done by just stupid, negligent people because there's too much stupid stuff that has been done to have been done just by stupid people. It has to have been done by design. Because these people could have corrected themselves over the course of time. We've got congressmen in there for 10, 15, 20 years. They had to have known what their past decisions were doing to the present-day Americans, and they didn't do anything about it. So even if they did do something stupidly in the past, their internal rudder should have shown them, okay, something's wrong here. We've got to correct this. And they didn't do it. Therefore, they allowed it to happen. That's treason.
Well, what you hear instead is from the people that you are blaming government, they say, oh, well, we didn't know. It's unintended consequences. So now we got to fix it. No, I don't think we should be fixing it. We should be repealing it. We should be defunding it and repealing it, not fixing it. But
they haven't done it. Which shows that they are treasonous.
And then they say, oh, it's the law of the land. It's already on the books, and everything's already in place. So to undo it, it's going to be impossible. But I say that's BS because we had the same thing with prohibition. We had the same thing with slavery, and we were able to undo it. We were able to outlaw it, undo it, defund it. But they're saying, no, you can't do that. Wayne, what's your opinion on that?
Listen, my opinion is we need to gather together in a big gigantic bus and drive to D.C. and stand at the bottom of the we need to start knocking on some doors. We need because they aren't afraid of us up there, and I'm not saying afraid to. As fear, but they don't want to answer our questions. They don't want to answer no phones. They don't want to take our emails. They think that they're better than us or above listening to the people they're voting them in. And I mean, you know, I tell people time and time again, the reason why those people are still up there is because you have these sofa generals. That want to lead from the house, but they don't want to get out and do the work. You know, I mean, as for me and my friends, we have decided no matter what, we're going to make it happen. We have to make it happen. We have to make them hear us. We have to vote these people out and put in some people that are going to listen.
That we have to do.
I'm sorry, Annie, go ahead.
No, that we have to do, because what happened was we had a delegation here from South Carolina, walked in Lindsey Graham's office, sat down, and told him exactly what their opinion was. And his response was, well, I don't care. I know better.
Well, there you go. You're out. And I would have recorded it and put it out there for everybody in South Carolina to see it, and it would have been a mass movement to vote him out. Because, again, they live in a bubble. They don't want to come out. And we have to burst that bubble and pull them out and put some people that are going to represent us in office.
Absolutely. That's why we've got four people running in a primary against Lindsey Graham. And we've got our South Carolina Tea Party convention coming up next month. And that is going to be the largest topic at the convention. Plus, we also have someone going after James Clyburn. So
good.
We're going after them.
Good. Good, because Silas Clyburn has to get out of there, too. He's been in there too long. Him and the Motisa tribe, Black Congressional Caucus, they just get up there and do whatever they have to do to stay in those seats. Those seats are theirs. The seats of the people.
Absolutely. And right now, he's been there for about four decades, and everyone knows he's got to go. Matter of fact, we had the gentleman that's running against him, Reverend Wynn, was on here on the show just last week, and he's a great guest. Wayne, you may want to think about having him on your show, too. But he's going to be up at the convention also, shaking hands and introducing himself to the heart of the conservative movement. It's not just Tea Party. It's 912 movements. It's whatever they call it. All the conservative groups gather next month. And we're going to start taking each place back. And the good thing, too, is the Republican Party here is starting to react to it. Out of 46 counties, five of them so far have censured Lindsey Graham. So that's another way.
I'm praying for y'all. I am. I'm praying for y'all that y'all will be able to take at least allow him to graze in the field and live out the rest of his years away from Washington, where he has done a whole lot of damage. He's done damage. McCain has done damage. Almost every Republican up there, over 8 years, has done damage. We need young, new blood, constitutional conservatism that don't mind following and supporting the Constitution. Because all those people up there right now, They don't know, well, not all of them, but most of them, a lot of them, they don't know anything about the Constitution. They don't even want to read bills to pass them. They just want that pension, you know, and they want the pension. They want to be able to write bad checks whenever they can, make money on stocks, backdoor talking or backroom talking, and barely go into the community in town halls to barely listen to the American public before riding out in their limousines or jumping on their Lear jets to go back to D.C.
Absolutely. Now, this is what I found really amusing. Last week you hear how Obama had signed up for Obamacare himself. It turns out he didn't. It was a staffer who went on the website and was looking at it, never signed Obama up. Obama is keeping his, you know, golden parachute plan. Here we go again, another lie.
Well, here comes a nice big duh, because that's all he's ever made of. If you take a look at this
from government, this is going to be good. It's going to be bad. We have enough laws. We have enough whatever it is. You know, realistically, they just need to be there to enforce our Constitution, and clearly they're not. But we have enough of everything. We don't need really any more laws and all this kind of stuff. We actually should repeal an awful lot more. But, I mean, we don't need it. Whenever they're, this person has a bill, I'll save it.
I happen to agree with you. There's 6 million laws in the books already.
To tell you just how stupid in general, by their very nature, Republicans are pretty much stupid people, just in my opinion. They're more followers. Over the last 10 years, they've become more like marching. Whereas 25 years ago, I think the GOP, they had leaders. They had guys, they had people who were on the front of the pack riding them horses, charge. Now they just got these followers. But one of the things that really bothers me is that, okay, George Bush gets up here and we're going to pass the Patriot Act and everyone cheers. You know, and I mean, we need to be very skeptical of all of these people. And our founding fathers were very, very critical of this. And basically that's why they put the Constitution, and that's why they put the Senate the way it is, whereas the states pick their two senators, not voted in, because they basically foresaw people buying politicians in general. So, I mean, whenever someone says, well, he's got a new law, oh, God, I cringe.
Yeah. Well, you're right, Mike. Hey, you're going to say something?
Well, I was going to follow up with that real quick, is that, I mean, you listen to these people, and both Democrats and Republicans, they're all salesmen. And basically, you have one side or you have the other, but it's the same coin. So you have this person who says, they're against government, and people cheer. And then the other side says, they're against government, and everyone boos. I mean, all this is basically two sides of the exact same coin, and we just fall for it.
Yeah, you're right. Those two wings of the same buzzard, because there isn't really a dime's difference between the Republican Party and the Democrat Party. When whoever gets in control of the House and the Senate, they still keep raising taxes. They still keep fighting wars. They still do not defund anything. And Kucinich, when he came out about 4 or 5 years ago, and he actually made that particular statement, when he said, if the Democrats were really against war, they would have defunded the Vietnam War. They would have defunded whatever war was going on at that time prior to this Arab Spring crap. So, you know, the Congress, regardless of their bipartisan smoke and mirrors, I can't say because you've got an affiliate now. but regardless of that smoke and mirrors nonsense, they do not do what's absolutely necessary. If they really wanted to get rid of whatever the president had in mind, they could have defunded whatever that particular program is or was, but they don't do it. That's why I say they are treasonous bastards. They
treasonous?
Have to,
Right. Treasonous and calculating ignorant bastards. I mean, anytime you keep the minorities dependent on almost every word that you say for votes, you know, that's another thing. That's another thing that I like to fight against.
Well, I don't know if you would say ignorant, Wayne. I would say more like crazy smart. You know, they act as if they're stupid, but they're doing everything by manipulating us. It brings me down to number six about Kurt's thing. He writes, the Democratic Party can rely more on the ignorance of and the display more contempt for its base than any other political party. Well, I would say to a degree Republicans are doing the same thing too. You know, they're relying on the ignorance of the populace.
Yeah.
The uneducated voter is what their gold stone is.
Annie, that follows up to the point that I tried to bring up, is that I said by their very nature, Republicans in general are stupid people. I think 25 years ago when a Republican was talking, his biggest critics were other Republicans. These people were leaders. They were not people that just now shake their head. For example, in Michigan, Rick Schneider, who is a Republican who everyone loved because, of course, he has right to work, and that's bigger government, and Republicans love that. The fact is, Republicans are wanting more government control and wanting more of the people to be stupid, not educated or fighters. And that really indicates that basically a handful of at the top are pushing an agenda. Many, many years ago, I know the Catholic Church did not want people to read the Bible. The priests were going to interpret the Bible for you. And this way, you know, you didn't have to read it on your own. It was pretty much and this is exactly what this is. In general, I forgot who it was who said something. I think it was Thomas Jefferson said something like, a prostitute's better than a politician because at least you're getting something from the prostitute. Something along those lines. And what has just happened, And this has been coming. It didn't just come with George Bush. This has been happening over decades and decades, is that people have just, I don't know, just allowed for slowly but surely for us to be in the shoes. And one of the things that really disturbs me is clearly Kennedy was assassinated for a reason. And, I mean we almost let that this, ever since then, the position of the president is kind of just another person with leadership. It's not been the president of the United States. Nobody was ever meant to suffer for that or to pay a price for that. And that clearly, go ahead, Annie.
I would amend it because you're saying the Republicans are, you know, just want big government. A true Republican does not. What we have is infiltrators into the Republican Party, and those are the people we have to get rid of to take back our standard. Because if you look at the platform they passed at the last presidential election, it was a strong conservative platform, and they passed that at the convention. So that's what we have to do, get rid of the Democrats that infiltrated our party, and number one of them is Lindsey Graham.
Well, I agree, but the platform itself doesn't mean much. I mean, the platform was done by career Republicans. So we're the infiltrators of the party. The Tea Party is basically the infiltrators. But either way, you know, if we as people just stood for the Constitution as writ, period, this wouldn't happen, but we don't. There's always going to be politicians. Go ahead.
There's a reason for that. I mean, the public school system or even the private school system, you know, we have all been indoctrinated with, you know, you put your hand over your heart and you pledge allegiance to the flag, and then you learn what you learn in civics class. They don't teach you how to think. They don't teach you how to discern between fact and non-fact. So what we grow up thinking that authority is the last word. So when the politicians say their crap, most people believe it because we don't think that they're going to lie, okay? We've been taught that if they're going to tell us something, that they're the final word on their particular topic because they should know. Like I think Rice said, or maybe some other politicians have also either said or implied, is that we know. We're here in Congress. We're here in D.C. You're not. Oh, that's right, Graham. That was the story you were talking about, Annie. And they'll say, well, we know what's going on. You don't know what's going on. And, you know, maybe we don't know. But if we did learn about the Constitution, if they did take more time to teach us what the Constitution was about in civics class, we would know. They don't want us to know.
Well, a lot can be said for that. But I hate to do this to you guys because we've been having such a great time. I'm going to allow Thomas just 2 minutes, please, because we still have to do our dedication. We have not been able to do that because Congressman Price came in at the first end of the hour. So, Thomas?
Annie, I'm just
listening. Oh, Thomas
just dropped. Another one got cut off.
Man. Yes.
Hey, NSA, stop the stuff.
Wayne, I want to thank you for joining us. I do want you to come back. Absolutely. Let me know when you can come back on and, you know, be a guest co-host with us. And Joe, you know I love you, baby doll.
Well, wait a minute. Let him for the dedication. Hang on. We're going to dedicate the show to a soldier. Let him stick around to hear the dedication.
Absolutely. I do want them to hear that. But everyone does.
Also, Joe, I know you're very concerned on privacy. If you don't mind giving me an email address, I'll at least send you some links. But you know how to get a hold of me, so I'll leave that to you.
Okay, Mike. All right,
well, thank you, Joe and Wayne. I want to wish everyone a very, very blessed and Merry Christmas. And everyone that listens to the show knows that we dedicate each show to a fallen hero. And today's dedication is going out to Army Specialist Gregory J. Missman. So, Mike, if you can pull up the Army mix for us, please.
It's playing.
And this is from the Military Times. Army Specialist Gregory J. Missman died July 9th, 2009, while serving during Operation Enduring Freedom. Gregory Mission of Batavia, Ohio, assigned to the 704th Brigade Support Battalion, 4th Brigade Combat Team, 4th Infantry Division, Fort Carson, Colorado. He died at Bagram, Afghanistan, of wounds sustained somewhere in Afghanistan when enemy forces attacked his unit using small arms fire. Missman was assigned to the 704th Support Battalion, 4th Combat Team, 4th Infantry Division, out of Fort Carson. His had a son, Gregory J. Mishman's son, was four-year-old Jack, who didn't quite understand the significance of his dad's death. Yet his words are mature. Dad was a strong soldier, Jack said, as he ran into the arms of his mother, Brooke. He loved us. We loved him. Mishman was wounded by a roadside bomb and was awarded the Purple Heart before he died of his injuries on July 9th. He enlisted in the Army after graduating from Amelia High School in 1993, serving for more than 3 years. He then worked as a computer consultant before re-enlisting. He was then assigned to Fort Carson. I don't know who I'm going to get to fix my computer, said his father, Jim. The soldier was a hero to his family long before his death. Quote, he's always been a hero of our family, said his sister, Dawn. I remember several Thanksgivings we spent together where he was down volunteering on homeless shelters, feeding people who had no place to go or eat. He is survived by his father, Jim, his mother, Donna Mishman Turner, his son, a brother, Michael Mishman, and a sister, Dawn. This is from the Cincinnati News. Pierce Township named the day for soldier killed in action. This was just this past December 13th. Pierce Township set aside a day in the summer to honor a fallen hero soldier. Officials named July 9 as Gregory Mishman Day in the township to recognize the ultimate sacrifice that the U.S. Army specialist made while serving in Afghanistan. Mishman reenlisted on Veterans Day in 2008 and was deployed to Afghanistan the following June. While bringing supplies to forward operating bases in Afghanistan, his vehicle was hit with three rocket-propelled grenades on July 8, 2009, and he died from his injuries the following day. Quote, we thank you as a board, and we greatly appreciate the sacrifice you have given, not only with your son, but with your own lives, Township Trustee Rich Rebill said to Gregory's father, Jim, after reading a resolution designating the day of recognition. Jim Mishman also received an Ohio Military Medal of Honor for his son's service from State Senator Joe Euchre out of the 14th District. Euchre said, when a service member's parents are no longer together, as in this case, each parent receives a medal, but the second one got lost in the paperwork. We are grateful for those who made the sacrifice and sent medals to those fallen in the line of duty in service to our nation, he said during the medal presentation. Since his son's death, Jim Mishman has set up the Specialist Gregory Mishman Memorial Fund to provide emotional, financial, or educational assistance to children of veterans. Mishman, who was 36 when he was killed in action, left behind many family members, including his son Jack, who was 4 years old at the time. Jim Mishman said the Memorial Fund keeps his son's memory alive. This is very nice, he said, holding back tears of the medal in resolution and presentation. I think getting this helps bring closure for me with the recognition my son has been given. Mishman enlisted shortly after he graduated in 1992 and served more than 3 years in the early 1990s before returning to civilian life. His name, along with 13 other Claremont County men killed in the Persian Gulf, Afghanistan, and Iraq conflicts, is engraved on a new Fallen Heroes Memorial in East Fork State Park. We dedicate the show to Joe Mishman, to all the men and women who have served, who are serving, and who will serve. We thank them for their service. We will be back after the song dedication in 4 minutes. Please enjoy and download Todd Allen Herndon, My Name is America.
Born in the grip of oppression, I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. when I'm attacked. I protect and defend, because my name is America. I stand proud and free. My name is America. Don't tread on me. I cannot be broken. I cannot be shamed. If you hurt me, I'll get stronger, and I'll rise up from the flames, and I'll always stand proud and free. I'm America. Don't tread on me. America is my name. My strength was not taken from others. Others gave it to me. They believe in the virtues I stand for, my respect for humanity. Now I'm challenged by tyrants who envy my power, but their vicious deeds become my finest hour. Because my name is America, I stand proud and free. My name is America.
My name is America by Todd Allen Harrington. I got to apologize. My sinuses are acting up if I sound a little strange. But brought back Wayne and Joe for one last final goodbye and Merry Christmas, Mike. We've got a great show lined up for Friday. We've got author Daniel Lykin, who's been on our show before. He wrote the book George Washington's Vision. And then next Tuesday, we have David Hale, who is running for, I believe it's Congress. Is it Congress or Senate? Let me see. Yeah, he's running for Congress out of Illinois. So we're going to have him on Friday on New Year's Eve. So we got great shows lined up. So, Joe, I want to thank you very much for joining us and calling in. And you know, baby doll, I love you. Come back every time you can. Joe, you there? Okay.
Hey,
you may have. Yeah, Joe, I was just saying thank you for calling in. You know I love you, so come back anytime you can possible.
All right, if you don't mind my interrogating your new guest who's running for Senate, I'd be glad to be here.
Oh, those are softballs, Joe. Jeez.
No more softballs. All right, I'll try to toughen up.
All right, thanks, Joe. And
hey,
Wayne,
you guys and Wayne, have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, okay?
Hey,
you
Joe.
Too. You too.
Joe was going to say to Joe, I see that... I forgot what city, but somewhere in Montana is wherever the one of the universities are. They're bidding to be to get the Winter Olympics there, I believe, in 32 or 34. So hopefully they will get it.
2032.
But yeah, it's somewhere close. It's just south of the Canadian border in Montana somewhere. I don't know the city, but there's a university there.
Yeah.
They're making shortly after the Olympics are played next year in 14 in Sochi, like I believe the following month or the month after is when they each city presents their does a presentation, and then they make an announcement shortly after. So I'm all for it.
Yeah, me too. I hope we have an America by 2032.
Yeah.
From your lips to God's ears, thanks, Joe, and Merry Christmas.
Sure.
Wayne, thank you for joining us. It was absolutely fun. Do want you to come back. I want you to come back anytime you can.
Thank you, dear. I appreciate you giving me the time. And as long as we can join arm in arm, hand in hand, and keep on moving this thing, we got a shot. And I'm glad to have been able to join with everybody here today, and hope everybody has a beautiful Christmas and a happy New Year and a terrific 2014.
All right. Wayne, if anyone wants to know where to find you, your website
What? WayneDupree.com or NewsNinja2012.com. You can also check me out on Twitter, which is Wayne Dupree Show, or if you are on Facebook, NewsNinja2012.
All right, Wayne. Thank you so very much. Have a very, very Merry Christmas. Mike, we had a really good rocking show here today, and I'm hoping it completely went through to Kinetic Hi-Fi. I've been getting a little bit funny stuff on my end. I hope no one else was. But it was showing that we were on the air there, and I don't know whether or not it was successful, but I'll check with them to see if we did succeed in getting a full broadcast done.
So, all righty, Annie. Well, you have a Merry Christmas, and we'll see you New Year's Eve.
All right. Until then, everyone have a very healthy, happy one, and I wish you a safe one. So until then, good night, and God bless, and Merry, Merry Christmas. Until then, on Tuesday.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble.
You've been listening to Southern Sense Blog Talk Radio. Producer and your hostess extraordinaire is Ann Ubelis. The theme music, American Stand Up, is written and performed by Don Fortney. For more from Don, check out his webpage, teapartymusic.web.com. Southern Sense is a proud member of Ghost Fighter Radio and Freedom Media Network. Southern Sense is common sense. Take it out, Don.
American.
Hi, I'm Chelsea.
And I'm Sam from Playboy Energy.
You're listening to Annie and Cool Mike.
Only on Blog Talk Radio.